Hey, welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Monday. It is April 13th, and I'm Scott Pianowski, your host. And I'm joined by my Yahoo colleague and good friend of mine, Mr. Dalton Del Don. Aloha.
How's it going, P&L? Thanks for having me. How you doing, man? It's always tough to answer that question myself, all things considered. It's kind of a weird time we're in, but I'm getting a little bit more optimistic that maybe eventually we will see some baseball.
Yeah, I would sign off for all that. I thought March was endless. I thought March was a really difficult month that felt like it was 3 months. I think April's gone at a much better pace, and we've seen some, starting to see some reasons for optimism. I hope everybody's hanging in there. I want to say thanks to everybody for reaching out, for all the comments, the tweets, the emails, engagement on articles, engagement on videos. We're all in this together. You're part of our community, and just interacting with you guys daily is a big part of my life, and it just helps keep me going. So I want to thank everybody for that. Dalton, you're kind of like our unofficial movie and media critic over at Yahoo. So give somebody who needs something to binge watch, somebody who's a little bit bored right now, give them a series or a movie or just something that you think they should check out right now.
Sure. Ozark's a fun binge on Netflix, but I'm going to go a little bit deeper and say a show called Devs. It's on Hulu, so maybe not everyone has that streaming service, but Devs is actually probably one of my three favorite shows so far this year. A big fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm and Better Call Saul, but more under the radar, a show called Devs.
Great call. I need to get into Ozark for a couple of reasons. One, it keeps getting recommended to me, and now people are starting to throw spoilers and comments into it, so I think I need to watch it before it's ruined for me. And by the way, I'll tease what our draft is going to be at the end of our baseball podcast today. We're going to draft movie endings. So if we mention any movie in this draft that you haven't seen, don't listen to the rest of what we say because we're going to spoil the ending for you. Ozark is something I should check out. I've been watching some old Sopranos episodes. Let me throw out one more recommendation. If you're going to rewatch Mad Men, make sure you go online and read the Molly Lambert recaps after you watch every Mad Men episode, especially the one she wrote for Grantland. They're incredible. They're my favorite thing that I read from the 2010s. In fact, I got into Mad Men even after Dalton recommended it to me about 100 times. I eventually got to Mad Men because the recaps were so good. I wanted to be in on what Molly was writing about. So I can't recommend those strongly enough. Let's talk some baseball. You can still draft Yahoo Fantasy Baseball. We're going to have a really open draft season up until opening day, whenever that is, and past that. And we're still hoping that we're going to see some baseball this year. Today, we're going to draft players that we're not eager to draft, players that we think are overpriced or misleading or just dangerous guys to get invested in. We've got a lot of big names on this list. So, Dalton, let's get right into it. Let's talk about some starting pitchers that you don't want to draft.
All right. So I signed up for one of the last online championship, NFBC, they're offering Wednesday night. I looked at the odds online, and the market says that there will be baseball this season. It may not be till August, so I'm getting excited, P&L. Oh,
I'm going to treat it at least. Good about that. I'm so glad you said that. We need reasons for optimism, man.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of horrible other stuff happening in the world, and don't get me wrong, and there's serious, and this is just total silliness, just an aside. But having said that, I am more encouraged and going to treat it that sports is going to be back in our lives sooner rather than later. Having said that, let's be pessimistic on some players. And we want to talk starting pitcher first, you said?
Yeah, let's go to the mound. You got a couple of big names you're not drafting.
Yeah, okay. We'll say Justin Verlander. The guy is awesome. I could see an argument for him being the number one overall player because I think starting pitchers are just so, so important. But 37 years old, this triceps injury, I guess it was deemed a mild lat strain, but then that turned into groin surgery. It's possible this timeline, late start of the season, is perfect for him. And again, number one overall upside. But man, he's going, his ADP is going ahead of Flaherty, ahead of Clevinger, who he's coming off just the knee surgery. To me, Verlander's age, he's too big of a risk for his ADP for me.
You mentioned because of his age, does that, you don't have him on your list, but does that also push you off Max Scherzer?
No, because he's 2 years younger, and he actually averages career high in like miles per hour of this fastball, his swinging strike percentage. A lot of the indicators suggest to me that Scherzer is just fine. And I know that he was banged up a little bit physically, but it's not the arm. And that's what I was really worried about when Verlander, when it first said the triceps, and it's not the first time he suffered this lat strain. So no, they're slightly different categories. And again, Scherzer is a couple years younger.
We're both going to pick three starting pitchers. We'll toggle over to me for a selection. And a lot of these guys are going to have a thread in common. Eduardo Rodriguez, currently ADP in Yahoo, is around 120. And I just don't get it. His career ERA is over 4. Look at the whip. His career whip is almost 1.3. Even in his breakout season last year, it was 1.33. And he's on a Red Sox team that I think is going to be bad. I mean, 19-6 and 13-5 the last two seasons. You can't chase those win-loss totals with Rodriguez. He has to pitch in Fenway Park. A lot of things wrong with this team right now. I think Boston is a 500 team when we finally get baseball back. So I would need a 30 or 40 pick discount before I'd even think about Rodriguez. I feel very confident. I don't know how many teams I'm going to have when it's all said and done. I'm not going to have any E-Rod.
Yeah, you know, Zips projects a 4.2 ERA, a 1.31 whip. Sorry, that's Steamer. Zips is even worse. Yeah, the control is just not there. He's not an elite control guy. And how many times has he thrown a lot of innings as well, too? So durability, a question mark. I'm with you with him, too, as well.
Okay, give us another pitcher.
Okay, my second pitcher is Luis Castillo. So 2 years ago, he had a 4.30 ERA. He had a 4.78 ERA in the second half last year. So basically, he's being treated as like a top 15 guy based on his first half last season, in which he had 53 walks over 106 innings. So like, it's just based on one half of just an amazing luck with BABIP. I don't want to go too deep into the stats, but I mean, even the ERAs have not been that great. So I don't really understand why he's being treated as an elite pitcher. He's a very good one being treated as a truly elite one based on one half of fortunate luck. He's not even on my top 25 board as a starting pitcher.
Right, and won't get any help from that ballpark either. I agree. He looks a little bit too pricey to me. I'm going to fade Tyler Glasnow because he's been drafted, I think, the last I saw, like in the 70s. And this is a guy who really never put it together with the Pirates. He went to Tampa Bay. He was okay at the end of 2018 with the Rays. And then last year, he had terrific 12 starts. But you know, we're talking about 60 innings here. Major injury. I don't know where the muscle memory is going to be with him. I don't know how many innings we can expect. So I feel like people are drafting him like he's a sure thing or just about close to a sure thing. And I don't think there's enough of a resume to put him in that bucket. I get that there's an upside. And I get that there's a time in the draft where you just hit the upside button and you just want something to have a chance to go incredibly right for you. But I think that should be a pick 100 or pick 120 for a guy like Glasnow. Again, I think he's just two or three rounds overpriced based on the resume I see.
Yeah, we can do good. We get to disagree on one. I'm the sucker that's going for the potential. I get it. The injury history, the lack of track record, but I ranked him and will draft him aggressively, led baseball and expected batting average last season, all of pitchers. The stuff is there, the pedigree, the pitcher's park, obviously not the greatest division, but I'm going all in. He's my Cy Young dark horse pick in the AL, but certainly understand your concerns. Would it be surprising if the next Roto-World update said that his arms hurt and you know, never see him again? Not at all. So definitely a low floor.
Yeah, I love the upside. I see all the reasons to draft him. I'm just afraid that the price has gotten too high. And again, he's coming off major injury last year. I don't know. It just makes me nervous. And we're going to disagree on your final pitcher. You don't like Patrick Corbin for some reason.
Yeah, just a little bit more of the Rodriguez situation with his, I don't know, I don't expect a great whip with that control. Washington's underrated as a hitter's park. We'll get more into, I don't know where all, I guess, let's just assume they're all playing in their own home parks.
Yeah, that's what I'm still doing. I have not done the park effects for all the Florida and Arizona spring training parks. I'll admit I'll be behind on the curve if we have to learn those someday.
For sure. Yeah, just Corbin, I think they're just kind of overrating a more recency bias. Having said that, I guess my argument is I don't like the ADP over Paddock, and he obviously doesn't have a huge sample himself. So, Corbin, I just expect a lot of projections doesn't have him, his ERA creeping over 4, and again, the whip. Love the Ks and the volume and all that stuff, but a sneakily tougher hitter's park than most people realize, and his price is too high for me. But you disagree.
Yeah, I wonder if some of these projection systems are holding against Corbin, who he – remember, if you go 3-year average with him, you're taking Arizona's park when it was still a hitter's park. I mean, the last 2 years, his ERA has been in the low 3s. He gets strikeouts. He gets ground balls. He's proven durable. He's thrown 190, 200, 200 innings the last 3 years. Washington looks like presumably a winning team, you know, coming off a World Series. I think they're one of the 5 best teams in baseball. I feel like he's a really safe pick. And also, because of Scherzer and because of Strasburg, I feel like he's always just a little bit overshadowed by those guys. I feel like he kind of hides in the weeds a little bit. And I think he's been underrated most of his career. So that's all fair.
I feel more confident in staying away from Castillo's price, honestly. That price to me is crazier.
My final pitcher, look, Hyunjin Ryu was one of the great guys to watch last year. He just always around the plate, and you get the pitcher park, and he had a career year. And this is after a year where he had a 1.97 ERA, you know, albeit in only 82 innings. But we've always worried about durability with him. Last year was the first time in 6 years that he pitched anything close to a full season. And now he goes to Toronto. I'm not sure how the team is going to play defense. We know the American League East is a dangerous place with a lot of good opposing lineups, and the parks can be dicey. You know, even when you go to Baltimore, the Orioles aren't that good, but the park can kind of be a mess. So I thought the market would really react to Ryu going to Toronto, and I feel like it's not. The ADP is still in the low 100s. I would need three or four more rounds where I'd even think about him. I do think Toronto could be a team on the come. I think they're probably better than the Red Sox on paper right now. Maybe they could even come in second in a short, high variance season. But Ryu, I don't want to buy him off his career year. Again, if the discount was there, it'd be fine. But I haven't seen it in the ADPs so far.
Yeah, I won't argue with you there. I think he's full. He's legit. He's real what he did last year. Maybe not low twos real, but he's fantastic. But he threw more than 100 innings more than the 2018 durability concern. You mentioned the AL East, obviously so much tougher. So I'm with you. I like what the Blue Jays are building. But if they all bets are off now, I guess, with the shortened season. But my feelings with Ryu is also that they're likely to finish fourth or fifth in that division. So they're not going to push him. He was one of the top early shutdown candidates as well, too. So, yeah, a guy you're buying off a peak career year, big time. And that's the theme with my guys to avoid this year, too. So he fits that bill big time. Then you add in the huge drastic change in circumstances. So really hard to argue with you there.
Right, that's face the DH too after all those soft landings in the National League. So there are some pitchers, starting pitchers, that we're not interested in drafting. Now we're going to hit the infield. We'll talk about four guys each that we don't want to draft. And, you know, you have Paul Goldschmidt at first base. He's already on some of my team, so I guess we're going heads up on this. Tell me why I'm an idiot for drafting Paul Goldschmidt.
So my truthful answer is I don't really have a great one for first base. No guys at the top I wanted to avoid. This is just kind of a boring answer. And typically I'm like, go after these boring veterans. But Goldschmidt's still being treated kind of, you know, as a top 10 first baseman. I would rather just wait on the position and get a Luke Voit, Yandy Diaz, Daniel Murphy, Eric Thames. I like waiting on the position this year. Goldschmidt's coming off his lowest WRC plus since his rookie year. And St. Louis is just really quietly very tough on righty power. Obviously, he played his whole career before that in Chase Field. So that's my thought. Downside of his career, big name, his price still requires something of the ticket, you know, the name values there.
I wonder, though, I mean, this is a guy who's played a full season five straight years. And when I say full season, like 155, 158, 159 games. Last year, 161. And he only hit 260, but he still had a 346 on base, 34 homers, 97 runs, 97 RBIs. He stopped running, so you have to take that out of the equation. If that's the floor for Goldschmidt, and I think it probably is right now, man, I'll take it. I mean, all the first basemen that you mentioned as options, that they're certainly a lot cheaper and they have plausible upside, but I don't think any of those guys have any floor. I feel like Paul Goldschmidt, I can feel pretty confident. I know his elbow was bugging him a little bit the last time we saw some spring training news, which, you know, feels like 5 months ago, but hopefully he'll be hale when the season's ready to go. He's landing in around the fifth round. I don't think first base is very deep. I think he's actually a pretty reasonable buy at the cost.
Yeah, I knew you'd probably disagree with that one. Give me Sano, even at similar costs, and I'm sure Sano is cheaper too. So, yeah, well, this he won't end up on any of my teams, but I get it. This is kind of one of those boring, but this is kind of a P&L type guy.
He is. I kind of cheated at first base, and I took DJ LeMahieu, who qualifies at first, but ostensibly is going to play some.
See, first base is tough, right?
Yeah, first base is tough.
It's a tough one to pick a guy that's getting overdrafted. I'm with you here. Go ahead. Sorry.
I like how he underscored the fact that when guys leave Colorado, we don't have to freak out because they don't become what they were on the road full time. That's just a fool's errand to believe in that. But man, 327, 26 home runs. I mean, this guy hardly showed any power in Colorado, and then last year it shows up. I just feel like you have to expect a lot of regression there. And of course, you just can't scheme regression and walk away. It's regression to what? But I feel like where he's being priced right now, people are expecting him to keep a lot of these numbers. I mean, he's right now in Yahoo, he is a top 60 pick. I don't get that. Because some people might say, well, hey, I get the position flexibility, and that's nice. But because Yahoo is the most lenient with the position flexibility rules in the fantasy baseball universe, I don't think LeMahieu helps you as much with that. So I don't know. The Yankees, with some of their big names are dinged up. I don't know how healthy they'll be when the season comes around. I think maybe the New York lineup is top 10 as opposed to top 5. And I'm just leery. I feel like the price of, if LeMahieu's the top 60 pick, I think that's people saying he's going to keep most of last year's stats. I think there's actually going to be a big correction for him this year.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. In general, batting average is an underrated category, which he provides. But no, people are apparently just paying up for last season, which, yeah, you bring up a good point. You know, leaving Coors Field obviously hurts, but the road numbers may improve. You're not that drastic difference in the breaking ball angle and all that stuff. But great year last year, LeMahieu, but you're buying peak career season, paying for those stats. No thanks. Certainly agree with you for sure, 100% with him.
Who's your pan at second base?
So second base was another one I had to think about. It's Jonathan VR. Like, I get it if you're in a league where stolen bases, you know, you're playing for an overall prize. I totally understand going for him. But, man, typically playing his whole career, what, in Baltimore, Milwaukee, now in Miami? I mean, that is such a pitcher's park. The last time he played in the NL, he's like a 693 OPS. I mean, realize his floor is in the 230s. He could bat 240s. He's been benched before. So I get it. With stolen bases are a scarce commodity, so I understand. But Jonathan VR is just knocking it up on any of my teams.
A lot of batting average, downside risk. And I think one thing that makes me nervous about VR, I may have a VR share somewhere, but I'm not totally against him. He's a much better fantasy player than he's a real-life player, and I think we always have to mind that gap. But the last I heard, the Marlins were talking about him being a center fielder. And anytime a player is asked to play a more difficult position on the defensive spectrum, it makes me nervous. Now, granted, Mike Moustakas was moved to second base last year. It didn't bother him at all. He handled it fine. But, you know, VR, I think he has like something like 12 games career in the outfield, center field, no less. It's not like they're hiding him on a corner. He's asked to play the most important outfield position. I just wonder if that might somehow seep into his effectiveness. And you have to figure, too, that Miami, they're probably looking to flip VR, right? I mean, I don't know what the trading deadline is going to look like, what the season's going to look like, but you get a figure that they would love it if he got off to a good start and then they ship him. And is VR a starter for whatever team that might trade for him? I mean, maybe he gets traded to Oakland or something. They're like, okay, you're super utility now and you're going to bat ninth. You know, I think that's plausible. So I see the downside for VR. This is a time where I'd take him. I think I got him in maybe his Tout Wars. I didn't remember, right? One of my early drafts, I have VR. So I'm not dead set against him, but I certainly see a lot of pitfalls here.
Yeah, it's a batting average risk is I'm mostly worried about. And you're right, yeah, all those stolen bases are great for fantasy owners, but in real life, the value is obviously not there. So if he finds himself in a different situation, quickly he could start losing some at-bats. Yeah, who's your second base guy?
Probably can't take last year's power at face value either. Now, there's going to be a lot of Astro bashing, I think, on the show. We already mentioned Verlander, and I'm going to go with Jose Altuve, who I think I'm going to mention when we did videos. Look, he career average 315. I think that's probably what you can bet on. But last year's power doesn't match up with the rest of his career. And he shut down the running game. He only stole 17 bases 2 years ago. And then last year, he was 6 of 11. He's into an age 30 season. The Astros seem to understand that stolen bases aren't that valuable anyway. I just worry. And also, Altuve, of all the players involved in that scandal with the Astros, he seems like the guy. I could see this maybe bothering him. Like he may have a certain amount of guilt or I think there's like an empathic part of Altuve where he might take this a little harder. I think Bregman can probably tune out the noise and say, okay, whatever. We did what we did. I'm over it. The boos aren't going to bother me. I wonder if Altuve has the thick skin to handle how the Astros are going to be treated when we finally get back to baseball. But I don't want to bet on the stolen bases returning. I don't think last year's power is something I want to chase. I think it's just going to be the fade years for Altuve. I think he was always a little bit of an overachiever, and I don't think he's going to be a great player in his 30s. Still landing as the third-round pick. I think you can wait at the position.
All right, I'm going to kind of piggyback off you while disagreeing at the same time. My shortstop pick is Alex Bregman, so I share those concerns with the Astros. My only argument would be that I've found Altuve falling a little bit more in drafts, whereas Bregman still costs an early second rounder. I would be the guy who gambles with the Tatis Juniors upside. In fairness, looking this up, Bregman had like 1,100 OPS on the road last season, so it wasn't necessarily just the help there. But just one stolen base attempt after the All-Star break. I'm expecting more 30 homers than 40. We talked about this regression, buying off really nice seasons, and then not to mention all these Astros concerns, which you hit on there. So Bregman, to me, in an early second round is a pass for me.
Right. And the home runs last year don't match his Statcast profile, right? They say, man, he wasn't a 40 home run guy. How'd that happen? So I think you could see a big collapse in his home run rate. I definitely see the red flags on Bregman. I'm not doing this intentionally, just the way it fell. Carlos Correa is my shortstop. Three straight years, he's had injury problems. He's never really been a stolen base guy. I mean, he's got 6 stolen bases the last 3 years. We've seen him hit as low as 239, and he might even be kind of low in the batting order. It's possible he might be their number 6 hitter when the season starts. I mean, still a good lineup, but, you know, he's not going to hit leadoff. He's not going to hit third. I think Correa came into the league and people thought he was going to be an MVP candidate, and he's never been in the top 15 in any MVP balloting, in part because he's not playing full seasons. I guess we still have to respect that he's a good player on a per game basis, but I feel like Francisco Lindor turned into the player we all thought Correa was going to be. I think Correa is just one of those guys who's been overrated most of his career.
Yeah, you know, he really did kill the ball when he did play last year, but I'm with you. He's very frustrating. I went to bat for him last year. That was the year to buy him. He's cheap, but he's constantly cheaper than he should be because he's always missing so many games. So maybe now is the time to buy him when people like you and I have given up on him. But I hear you, man. At some point, just stay healthy. And that park, it kind of played, if you look at the numbers, kind of as a hitter's park last year. But who knows? You know, they saw the home team knew what the pitches were coming. So the past 5 years before that had been an extreme pitcher's park. So assuming it goes back to that won't help Correa and these, you know, Altuve or all these guys, the Astros hitters that we're mentioning. But yeah, I'm with you. Correa, maybe there is a future MVP season in there somewhere, but he's more likely to miss another 100 games.
So let's go to third base and let's try not to pick any Astros.
Yeah, seriously. Okay, Anthony Rendon is my guy. Not only just a massive change in parks, so Washington, again, underrated hitter's park, to a really underrated pitcher's park in Anaheim, coming off the career year, learning a whole new set of pitchers, a whole new, you know, all those pitchers, all those parks now in the AL West with Texas moving are possibly pitcher's parks. Mm-hmm. Past injury history, too, with him. I've been going on record saying I'd take Vlad, as a theme with me, the younger guys at the upside. I'd take Vlad over him at the same price, but it's not even a similar cost. You're paying big time, full weight for last year's season, which was terrific. Rendon was absolutely one of the best baseball players last year, but he's not going to be any of my fantasy teams this upcoming one.
Yeah, I think he's a good call. You know, last year I was lambasting people who were taking Vladimir Guerrero over Anthony Rendon saying, what are you doing? Right. And this year, I'm going to double down on Guerrero. I think he's going to be a great player someday, but he's still not taking his conditioning that seriously. Last I saw, as our friend Gene McCaffrey said, he looks more like Carl's Jr. than Vlad Jr. sometimes. His ADP in Yahoo is 50, which is, okay, fine. That means I can get Juan Moncada a round and a half later. I can get Josh Donaldson 30 picks later. I can get Matt Chapman 30 or 40 picks later. Mike Moustakas 50 picks later. I know Guerrero's better than all those guys. I don't feel like that's any kind of a sure thing. I think all those players are really interesting. So it's going to happen for Guerrero. I just feel that the price is baking in too much improvement, at least more than I want to pay for. I'm much more likely to draft Bichette or Biggio or Gurriel. I think this Toronto team is going to be a really fun team. But to me, Guerrero is being priced like he's already an all-star, and I don't feel like I'm comfortable paying that.
I think if you hit cleanup in front of all those interesting guys you mentioned, Biggio could have a nice on base. And I just think 330, 340 is within his range of outcomes, the batting average. I'm just a believer in his minor league numbers were so, so good. I get it. The obviously, track record's not there. And he disappointed when he saw major league pitching. But and conditioning, he may have to move, full-time DH in real life. But I'm a believer, especially when you discount the price too. Rendon, what is his ADP in Yahoo right now? I'm sure it's much higher, right? 30 picks higher.
I think it's 21 for Rendon, and Guerrero is 50.
And again, going from Washington, a new set of pitchers, and a much from extreme hitters park to extreme pitchers park. In my mind, that is not getting accounted at all in there. I mean, that's happening. I mean, to me, that's a big difference.
48 picks between Guerrero and Matt Chapman.
Yeah.
Give me Chapman. Give me Moustakas would also qualify at second base. You mentioned your guy Sano. Sano's 140. Look, I know we can play this game all day. The generic always looks better because he looks cheaper. But I have a theory in fantasy that the more fun a pick is to make, the less likely it is the plus EV move. So that's what I'm standing on with Guerrero.
Yeah, no steals, and who knows if his upside for power is just 25 this year. So I hear you. I hear you, man. But I think the batting average, he could win a batting title as soon as this season. But where do you stand on Rendon then? Are you spending a second-round pick on him?
No. I don't like the team change, actually. And as you said, he has to learn all the new pitchers. He has to deal with the weight of the contract, although at least, you know, Trout's always going to be the signature player there. I think Rendon – I've always been a Rendon guy, but – now you're taking him like he's an MVP candidate. And even though he was last year, before last season, he was just more of a good player. I don't think he even made an All-Star team before last year.
What an interesting top-heavy team, though, if he does, if I'm wrong, and he does continue to play like an MVP candidate, you know, with Otani, the two-way Otani and Trout. I mean, they could just be have three of the, you know, 10 best players in baseball right there.
And you make a great point about the parks, right? I mean, if Texas is close to neutral, first of all, we can't imagine Texas will be anything close to what it used to be. Houston has been a pitcher park, misunderstood because all those cheap home runs down the line, but Houston's a pitcher park, Oakland, a gigantic pitcher's park, Seattle's a pitcher park. You know, this is not the place to land for ideal stadium boosting. So I think Rendon's an easy guy to cross off for me. It was hard for me to pick a catcher. Catcher's just kind of ugly, but we're going to go through every position. So give me a catcher you're unlikely to draft.
Yeah, he asked for a buzzy once. I just said Real Muto just because my theory this season has been not to draft top catchers. No catcher projects. You look at any of the system for 500 at-bats, 25. I mean, Real Muto is by far the best one, and he's not even 25 homers, 280 or 80 runs. The counting stats aren't there. It's just not enough where he's requiring the other players available. To me, just wait on the position. There's just not one that's going to give you the volume.
When you say wait on the position, I'm curious, what catchers do you find yourself drafting a lot?
Well, okay, so the dimension, it's going to sound like a homer, but with the dimensions changing in San Francisco and Posey getting that scar tissue with his hip and batting average is such a joke. That's the reason our argument with Real Muto is 280 kind of looks like 350 when you compare him to other catchers in batting average. Well, Posey could hit 280 and he could hit bat second too in a lineup too. So I like Posey later, but there are any numbers of quote unquote sleepers, Navarez, Kelly in Arizona, Tom Murphy in Seattle, even boring Molina, but there's a lot of options late, but Posey for me, I have like the top 10 guy and he's going nowhere near that in ADP.
Yeah. I got Posey and Tout Wars. I'm just hoping for a volume grab and a decent OBP grab there. I had a hard time coming up with a fade, but I'm going to fade Will Smith for a couple different reasons. Collapsed in September, 175, 284, 298. The Dodgers will have other options at catcher. He'll probably bat low in the lineup, albeit a really good lineup. And his Yahoo ADP, I mean, he's the number six catcher off the board in Yahoo. I say if you're in a one catcher league, you could even not draft the position and just take somebody after the draft, after you maybe tuck away a DL guy or two. I think the middle of the draft and the late part of the draft, not that those guys are sure things, but you pick a guy, if he doesn't pan out, you go with somebody else. Omar Narváez looks like a decent value. Carson Kelly busted out last year. I'm not sure what to make of Christian Vasquez, but it still is Fenway. He'll play most of the time. I was surprised that Will Smith, maybe the Dodgers just kind of a buzzy, high public team, but I'm surprised that he's the sixth catcher off the board in Yahoo right now.
Yeah, I agree with you with Will Smith. He was not like considered some elite prospect before he went off, and there's a batting average risk there. Don't know about the at-bats for Mitch Garver, but I would still take him higher. I'd even take Salvador Perez higher. But to me, this is a position you can wait, even in two catcher leagues. I really think I get it that Real Muto looks like he's clearly the best, but last year he was neck and neck with Sanchez, and batting average is so it just fluctuates year to year. I could see Sanchez 45%. Better a chance of having a better fantasy season than Real Muto, and he's, you know, five rounds later.
Do you prefer one catcher format or two catcher format?
I don't feel strongly either way. I could give or take it either. Just given the state of catchers, I don't think it's super necessary like I do fantasy football. I think it's not only necessary to have a super flex, but tight end is suddenly loaded. Catcher is not the same, man. It's so weak. I'm okay with either, frankly. But either way, though, I will say this. Either way, it's not changing as far as how I treat the elite at the position.
If you do go two catcher and you're playing anywhere from 12 to 15 teams in a mixed league, I think Tucker Barnhart's a pretty decent like $1 catcher off the waiver wire. When he was healthy last year in the second half and retooled his swing, he was actually a pretty productive player, probably a safe guy for playing time. So just keep him in mind as a last round guy or maybe somebody off the waiver wire. Let's go to the bullpen. Saves are a fact of life. It's 5x5 category. They can be a pain in the neck to draft, but you do have to draft them. Give me a closer you're leery on.
All right. So, okay. Hansel Robles, I'm going to go ahead and use projection systems here. I feel like they're smarter than me. They take in more into effect. Maybe he made some correction. He's a new pitcher here. We saw what happened with Blake Treinen. Robles made a big, big improvement in walk rate, but I don't know how much that can carry over. The bat projects, Derek Carty's system projects Hansel Robles, 4.57 ERA, 1.35 whip. Meanwhile, Ty Boutre, you know, is an ERA in the mid-threes. So I'm avoiding guys like Hansel Robles, Alex Colomé, Brandon Workman, who all have younger guys, Aaron Bummer in Chicago, and Matt Barnes, who projects one of the highest K rates in Boston, right behind Workman. So those guys, I'm just, you know, looking at the projection systems, feel like they take in more information than I could, and that's what the data pointed me toward.
Yeah, you know, Colum is a guy I've drafted a few times because I think he's underrated as the pitcher, but the problem is what you underscored. Chicago's depth in the bullpen is ridiculous. They have so many other good guys. And with that offense being intriguing, with the, you think that maybe they could be, I could see maybe contend for a wild card spot this year. If Colum has any kind of a hiccup, I feel like they're going to think like, hey, we're trying to make the playoffs here. We get to go with something else. So even though I think Colum is good enough to hold the job, I'm just nervous that I feel like they have five other guys who all look pretty good. If you know, he were for any reason to stumble out of the gate.
Yeah, his career walk rate is 2.96 per nine. So all it takes is like a couple bad weeks or a couple bad, you know, unlucky performances when you got guys on base and then suddenly there's a change. Totally with you on the White Sox. They're one of my three or four favorite long shot World Series bets at 50-1 before the season. Well, I guess we're still before the season now, aren't we?
Yeah, I guess we are still before the season. they're also just going to be a team. They're going to be an MLB extra innings team for me. I'm going to have the White Sox on. I want to watch them. I want to have shares of them. Just a mix of guys who have power, guys who have speed, guys who have swagger. I've always been a Tim Anderson guy. And I know people are going to say, oh, you know, Tim Anderson's not going to hit 335 again, or Moncada's not going to have a BABIP over 400. Well, you know what? Moncada's going to have a BABIP of 340, I bet, or 345. The guy hits the ball hard. He runs pretty well. I think it's a case of the regression police are going to go too far on him. I will always take Tim Anderson. I know the shortstop position is unusually deep this year. You can do well at any price point. I feel like I say that every week on this podcast, but give me all the Tim Anderson.
Moncada's a monster. I'll get another guy. I'll say 49% chance he has a better season than Anthony Rendon.
Yeah, another third baseman to take on a discount. And I could not more agree. I've loved Rendon, but that ADP of 21 doesn't make sense for me. Twins are still, as much as we love the White Sox, the Twins are still the favorite in that division. And I know Taylor Rogers took control of that closing job, but I feel like this deep bullpen is very deep. And if he has any kind of a step back, that they're likely to committee it, go somewhere else. You know, the numbers look good. I don't have any reason to believe he won't be a good pitcher, but I don't know. I don't think Minnesota's going to give him a long leash. He did allow 8 home runs last year in 69 innings. I could see that being a problem. So I don't – something about Taylor Rogers just makes me nervous. I just think Minnesota would be likely to change something if he got any kind of a poor start out of the gate.
I'm with you just in general, that middle tier of the Neris. The guys – you know, Rogers has not done it long with a lack of track record. Again, a couple slumping weeks and they change roles and you spent a 10th round pick on a guy that's suddenly droppable in your fantasy league. So I'm with you. Saves are the trickiest positions or category to go after and it's tough. Rogers was a guy I didn't have on any of my teams. So I couldn't disagree with you there.
And the other closer fade I wrote down – sorry to keep hammering this theme – Erin Skelly's going to, like, you know, unfriend me after she listens to this podcast. But Roberto Osuna, here's the thing with closers, okay? I grew up a Red Sox fan, as a lot of people know. And one year I drafted Mariano Rivera on my fantasy team because, look, I just want the numbers, right? And then it hit me that when I draft Mariano Rivera for their fantasy, what I'm really saying is I want the Yankees to win games. And I don't want the Yankees to win games. I want the Yankees to lose as many times as possible. If I'm going to root against the Astros, and look, I get it. Fantasy, we just want the numbers. You want to root for yourself. But there's going to be a little bit of fandom in here. And if I want Houston to crash and burn, then I want Roberto Osuna to crash and burn. I can't root for this team to be. I'd love to see Oakland steal that division. Or I'd love to see the Angels, you know, get into contention and beat Houston this year. So I'm not going to take Osuna just because I don't want to root for the Astros to win games. He'll probably be fine. His track record's okay. Was a little bit homer prone last year, but I'm just because I'm fading the Astros as a team.
You got to stay on brand.
I'm going to stay on brand. And like if anybody wants to fight back against me and say, hey, you know, the numbers are here, you're passing up a good player, I'll shrug and say, yeah, I see your point.
Where are we going now? Are we talking outfielders, P&L?
Yeah, let's talk some outfielders. Any outfielders you don't like?
You know, I'm going to just go to Yankees with Aaron Judge dealing with his fractured rib. You know, they're still waiting for results, last I heard, to even understand if that's going to require surgery. I mean, he's missed 50 games, 60 games the last 2 years. And then Giancarlo Stanton. I mean, I get it. The 59 homers in Miami, which is, that's one of the best pitchers' parks. I get it. He could hit 80 in New York. He claims he could hit whatever, 100 if he knew what pitches were coming. But 18 games last year. Here's the deal. I understand maybe it's a buy low with injuries, but first he strained his left bicep, then that was a shoulder, then it was a calf strain, then it was a right knee, then he came back in the playoffs and it was a quad injury that ended his season, and then during a routine outfield drill, it's another calf muscle in spring that may have had him out till the end of April. I don't know. His ground ball to fly ball ratio has risen each of the last 4 years too, if you want to go really deeper, but Stanton and Judge, to me, this injury proneness is not getting discounted enough at draft tables.
Totally agree. And my outfield fade, my first guy, I think ties in a lot to Stanton. It's Bryce Harper. I think people keep thinking, hey, MVP in 2015, 330, 460, 649, hit 42 home runs. That's awesome. Well, what's he done since then? We've seen a 243 season, a 249 season, a 260 season. He's had some injuries here and there. I mean, last year he was okay, but it wasn't great. You know, doesn't really run as aggressively. I mean, I guess 15 stolen bases are fine. I get the idea that people draft Harper like he's still. I remember when he came up, it was going to be Trout and Harper. We're going to be linked for the rest of their careers. And Trout went on to be arguably the best player in baseball history. And Harper's a guy who is good. I don't know that he's great. Had some problems with left-handed pitching. Occasionally, he can be a little bit too much of a daredevil in the field, and it's hurt him. I just feel like he's always a round or two overrated. I think people are still thinking of that 2015 season and see that more realistically as a possibility of something he can do again, when I think he's never going to be back to that level.
Man, as a 21-year-old, Harper's WRC plus was 197. Trout, Miguel Cabrera, Manny Ramirez, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays never have reached that mark in a season. But just nothing even close since. I mean, we're just waiting for it. And now he's been in a nice hitter's park his whole career. But, when's it going to come? I mean, what do you think? Obviously, we've seen the best. So do you think that Harper's ever going to have another season even approaching, you know, Hall of Fame type levels like that again?
I don't think he'll be anywhere close to an MVP the rest of his career.
Yeah, it's a weird.
Nothing is not good. Nothing is not good. You just have to draft him like he's one of the top 10 hitters in baseball, top 15 hitters in baseball. And he gets drafted in the second round. I can't do that.
Yeah.
My other outfield fade, or another outfield fade. I can fade the outfield all day. But I like Tommy Pham. I like guys who are good at different things. But he had an elbow and a side injury in March. He's changing teams. He's going to a really poor park to hit. Although it's been a little bit better in recent seasons, he's going to be in Petco. So I don't know how healthy he is. I get nervous sometimes when players change teams. Also, Tampa Bay's been so right on so many guys that when they actively get rid of somebody, you almost wonder, like, what do they know that somebody else doesn't know? I feel like Tommy Pham is somebody generally I've been in on. He hit that year we went 300, 400, 500, which is really rare to do. And I like broad skill guys, but I'm nervous about him being hurt, nervous about him changing teams, changing leagues, and going to a park that's not good for offense. Of course, Tropicana Field isn't either, but I just think a lot of things are moving in the wrong direction for Pham.
Yeah, two other guys I'll throw real quick. You do not disagree with Pham, great player, but bigger health concern than his ADP suggests. But Tampa Bay, you may be right as far as getting them healthy, and they did a great trade with Austin Meadows, but his ADP does not take into account his extensive injury history throughout his career. And you mentioned Tropicana Field, a great pitcher's park. And then one other name, Lewis Robert, love the young guys, but man, I feel like you can get Byron Buxton 80 picks later for a similar profile, just as big of a batting average risk.
I wish I knew what to do with Buxton. I'm afraid to take him. He's going actually at a price where it's realistic, but I know this isn't maybe the right way to play fantasy, but I've been burned on him so many times before. I'm just leery to go there again.
Totally fair. I get it. Yeah. No, he's definitely not a P&L guy, but 80 picks later than Robert is last I looked at ADP. So that would be my stab for a guy like that. But I hear you. He'll probably get hurt again by the time we finish recording.
I should also mention outfield never draft Yasiel Puig. And the goal of your draft, kind of my weekly comment, but the goal of your draft is to not have Malik Smith on your team. You agree with me on that?
I agree with you and Malik Smith for sure. And then Yasiel Puig saved me from myself every year. You know, we used to record the preseason videos. I'd hype him up, but now he's not even on a team. Saved me from myself. But yes, I'm with you, Malik Smith.
I have a bias about people who aren't on teams. I don't know.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. I don't. I also help your fantasy team. I hate to say it, there's a knucklehead risk with Puig. I just feel like he's a little bit in the Tyson zone, right? I mean, any headline could come out with, and granted, in 2020, American life is in the Tyson zone. You can believe almost any headline now, right. But you know, if Puig, can you think of any presumable thing that could come out as a news item for Puig and you wouldn't believe it?
No, it's true. I mean, it's probably reasons that he's not signed yet. Puig's a bit of a wild card, to be sure.
The words of Dalton Del Don, our esteemed Yahoo scribe and the guest today on the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. If you disagree with any of these fades, well, you're wrong and we're right. But, you know, feel free to hit us up on social media, Dalton Del Don, Scott_Pianowski, Yahoo Fantasy as well. We're going to transition to our draft. It's movies. It's movie endings. We're going to have a lot of spoilers. So if we mention a movie that you haven't seen before, you know, turn the volume down or you'll maybe come back to this segment after you've seen some of these things. Dalton, I'm going to give you, I hope you don't take what I want, but I'm going to give you the first pick in our all-time movie endings draft.
All right. First off, I want to say good call with Lady Bird. It's because of you that pushed me to watch that movie recently. I'm not super far from the Sacramento area. Good call with that film. So most of these are going to kind of lean toward twists because we're talking about endings. But without further ado, I know this is not on your list, but I'd be disingenuous if I didn't say it. So Seven, I'm a David Fincher guy. My old email was even named after this movie when I started back in the day. What's in the Box is obviously the funny term people think of. But man, the buildup. It was impossible to live up to what this bad guy could be, but it somehow does. And just the completion, and it ends with an Ernest Hemingway quote. So to me, the conclusion of Seven is my favorite.
Yeah, I had a feeling we might be approaching this from different angles. Not that there's any wrong angle to it, where my preference on the guys, on the things that I listed were more, I like how people stuck the landing in these movies. The just certain feeling I got after the movie ended, and my overwhelming number one choice is Lost in Translation.
Yeah, okay.
A movie I love. If I'm ever single again, I think I would demand that the girl in question take like a Lost in Translation quiz. I would need us to be in the same wavelength from this movie. And everybody remembers it ends with Bill Murray whispering something that is inaudible to Scarlett Johansson. And that's obviously a big part of the ending. But just look at everything else in the scene. Look at how Murray's finally happy for the first time in the movie. Look at that. What the hell just happened? Look on Scarlett Johansson's face after they're walking apart and she looks back, and it's very well acted. It's so subtle. And then they go to the Jesus and Mary Chain song, Just Like Honey, which is fantastic. They're driving through Japan. It hits me in all the feels, man. Lost in Translation is one of my favorite movies. And I, at that time, I would have bought up all the Sofia Coppola stock. I would have thought, man, she's going to be like one of the top five directors of the next 20 years. I'm not sure exactly what happened to her. And I also really liked her debut movie, The Virgin Suicides. But Lost in Translation is an amazing film. And the last 5 minutes, just perfect. I could not change a single thing.
Totally agree with you there. More subtle, more arty pick than me. And I'm going to go with some obvious ones here coming up too, but that's no argument there. And do you have an opinion of what he did whisper with what the whisper was?
I don't think you need to know.
Yeah,
I just
that's
believe.
The point,
I just.
Yeah.
And here's the thing too, the movie. There's this simmering tension between them, and it looks like they're not gonna. It's gonna end kind of awkwardly with them, and I believe that there's a payoff there that's legitimate. I mean, sometimes when movies end, they just want the Hollywood ending. They want people to feel good. I think this is a movie that feels good, but it does it authentically. We believe that the characters could have acted the way they have, and that they deserve the ending that they get. I feel like it's merited. It's been, the characters have been developed that well. The relationship, look, how many movies does the relationship get kind of developed as it? Well, 3 minute music montage. Oh, look, they're playing air hockey. You know, this is a movie that actually develops the characters, and they're very unhappy in a lot of ways. And I get goosebumps when Murray's walking away and he's finally happy. And there's a smile on this guy's face. He hates his life. He hates his marriage. He hates that he's in Japan doing this commercial. And all of a sudden, this guy found something that makes him happy. That movie washes my soul.
All fair points. Don't disagree with you. My second pick, maybe this is a low-hanging fruit, but we're drafting movie endings. Give me The Sixth Sense. Mm-hmm. When it comes to M. Night, I'm actually an Unbreakable guy. I think it's like the best comic book superhero movie. But man, Sixth Sense, I mean, you don't see it coming. It makes it, you have to rewatch it. It's, in my opinion, is probably the best twist ending. So if we're drafting movie endings, maybe it's obvious, but man, I mean, The Sixth Sense.
Unfortunately, The Sixth Sense is one of several movies where I became aware of the hook before I actually saw the movie. And so it's just hard. I wish I could have watched it cold. I think you should go into any movie you want to see cold. If somebody sells you on seeing a movie and you're going to see it, I think you should just go in as cold as possible. Don't read movie reviews. Don't watch trailers. You're going to be told too many things. In the case of The Sixth Sense, I already knew what the hook of the movie was before I saw it. So it's hard for me to, I wish I could experience that the way it's meant to be experienced. It's still a great
totally pick, agree though. With you. I actively avoid trailers. As soon as I know I'm in, I go out of my way, and I never watch scenes for the next, you know, next week's episode on TV. I'm with you there.
And the favorite movie critics that I have, they're all great to read after the fact, but they're really bad to read before the fact because you get told too many things. So yeah, great pick. And obviously an all-time classic hook ending. Again, I'm going to go more for kind of what these movies meant for me emotionally. I'm going to go with About Schmidt as my second pick. Alexander Payne's my favorite filmmaker. And About Schmidt is a movie about Jack Nicholson late in his career in such a non-Nicholson role. There's nothing glamorous about him. He's an old man who's recently widowed. His daughter's getting married. He's not sure how he feels about that. He's really at a bad place in his life. He's found out one of his best friends has kind of done him wrong through the years. So he's at a really bad place in his life. And all during the movie, he's supporting somebody who's impoverished from a low-income nation. And at the very end of the movie, when Nicholson's really at his wit's end and he's wondering if his life has any meaning at all, he gets a letter from the boy he's sponsoring who's written him. The nurse who takes care of the boy has written a letter, and the boy can't read or write, but he's done a painting for Jack Nicholson. It's about the quality of a five-year-old, six-year-old painting. And it just, if that movie doesn't make you cry, you're not alive. I love the way that movie ends. And you should see any Alexander Payne movie. I could list like pretty much his whole catalog in this draft, but I'm going to go with About Schmidt.
Dear and Dugu. Yeah, great pick. Dear Election top 10 comedy for me. Sideways top 10 film all time for me. So I'm with you on Alexander Payne. I just got caught up on it. I had not seen a Nebraska or Downsizing until recently. Great choice there. Again, far more high art than where I'm going. My third pick for the best movie all time ending is Psycho. I still remember when I was like about in the eighth grade, I remember the chills when that chair does turn around. It changes so much of what you assumed happened before. One theme here is I'm a little demented, and that is kind of a twisted ending there. So Psycho is my third choice.
Great choice. It's funny that you could say sometimes that a movie, I think Pulp Fiction is the best movie I've ever seen. It's not my favorite movie. It's not even my favorite Tarantino movie, as far as I always want to rewatch Jackie Brown. But Pulp Fiction broke so many rules. It's a movie that's not told in linear fashion. And it starts with a robbery in a coffee shop. It ends with a robbery in a coffee shop. There's a standoff. Samuel L. Jackson's tremendous in that scene. We don't know what's in the briefcase. That movie just, it broke a lot of rules. It made a lot of rules. I think it's the most influential movie of the last 30 years. And God, does Quentin Tarantino absolutely stick the landing. The final scene in Pulp Fiction, fantastic.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite movies of all time, too. I thought about adding it here because it does tie it together, and the ending is pretty cool. I mean, we all picture Jules' wallet, you know, walking the earth, the breakfast conversation. Fantastic.
Plus, you already know that John Travolta's dead, right? I mean, just the things that are out of place here, you know.
Oh, yeah, and they're wearing the funny banana slugs, I believe.
Right. They're wearing the goofy t-shirts. Ha ha, the year closed.
Sure. So where are we on my fourth pick? Yep. I'm going to go with The Godfather. I absolutely remember the ending of that. The first time I saw it, when it just pans away and his wife, you know, the family's gathering. I believe they call him Don Corleone, even as the door closes and it just pans off. And she's kind of slowly realizing, oh, things are going to be a little bit different moving forward. So I totally stuck out to me. I really love the ending of the original Godfather.
Great choice. I'm not sure if this next pick I make is more of just a statement of me loving the movie than the ending itself. But Shawshank Redemption is one of those movies I will always watch. And people could argue, hey, the most important thing in that movie is Tim Robbins escaping and him getting out of that nasty 500 yards of sewage and you know, the rain's washing over him and everything. But I still get choked up when he finally reconnects with Red. And these two people, you know, Robbins is innocent of his charge, and Red has been rehabilitated and is a really decent guy. And they've built a friendship that you can, again, a lot of movies gloss over relationships, gloss over friendships. I think that movie legitimately shows that Red and Tim Robbins have a relationship of merit, of substance, and the idea of them being free men, doing something they love, and actually having their souls replenished. I believe in that. I think the hug works. You could have ended that movie a lot of different ways, but I agree with the choices that they ultimately went with.
Love Shawshank. Okay, so it's my last choice, right? Yep. Final one?
Last one.
Man, okay. I could go with Chinatown, Planet of the Apes, Citizen Kane, There Will Be Blood. I'm going to go off the wall here and say a movie called Adaptation. It's directed by Spike Jonze, but it's written by Charlie Kaufman, who's just, I think it's arguably the best script ever written. And the first time you watch this, you might kind of not really understand what's going on, the final act. I remember I had to run home and read reviews and kind of figure out by people smarter than me what happened. But it's brilliantly written, and the whole final act just ties it together so well. So Adaptation is my final choice.
Man, we really took great pick. We really did totally different movies, because I had like 11 things on my board. And none of them got taken. Not saying anything about your choices other than I think, you know, we have a little bit of slightly different tastes in movies, although I respect the movies that you love, and I know that you like a lot of the movies that I love. I'm gonna take Field of Dreams. You either go for Field of Dreams, it either hits you emotionally or it doesn't. Kevin Costner's playing catch with his dad. I don't know. That works for me. I love the baggy uniforms in that movie. I love Ray Liotta cast in that movie. I love baseball. I either Field of Dreams works for you with kind of the goofy hook of the whole movie, or it doesn't. But playing catch with your dad, like sometimes I think, in this pandemic shutdown, I think, man, I miss playing golf. And then I think, the last round of golf I played last year is with my father in Alabama. And, if that's the last round of golf I play for a real long time, playing it with my dad is a pretty good way to have that standing. So I'm going to go with Having a Catch with Your Dad in Field of Dreams. I'll mention some of the movies that were on my board that I'm not going to use. Sideways, I love the open-ended way that movie ends. Good Will Hunting, North Dallas 40, movie everybody should watch. I like the subtle ending of Michael Clayton. Welcome to the Dollhouse is a very dark comedy, but I love the way that movie ends. And then there's a movie called The Last American Virgin, which sounds like it would just be an 80s mindless sex teen romp. And it's actually a movie with a lot of thoughtfulness and a lot of depth in it. And that movie ends in a very hard-hitting way, a very unexpected way. I'm not even going to spoil it because I think a lot of people probably haven't seen it. So I want you to see that movie. And I think you'll be surprised at how it ends. But that's some of the stuff that was on my board. But I'm going to end officially with Field of Dreams.
I'm a Todd Solondz guy. Good call. Welcome to the Dollhouse. But Field of Dreams, it's been too many years since I've seen it. I need to revisit it. And it's an excellent choice to end this baseball podcast.
Good stuff, my man. Good stuff. Tell our listeners and friends how they can hang out with Dalton Del Don.
Follow me on Twitter at Dalton Del Don. That's where I post all my stuff. And I appreciate it having me on, P&L. Good to talk some baseball with you. And hopefully it returns soon.
Amen, brother. Always good to talk to you. Hope the wife and kids are doing well. Props to my buddy Dalton. It was great today. If you want to hang out with me, I'm at Scott_Pianowski on Twitter. Only about 18 hours a day, so you gotta catch me in the right pocket. So for Dalton, for Raghu, our producer, for everybody at Yahoo Sports who are doing a great job trying to keep us together, man, let's take care of each other. Let's be good to each other. Let's remember we're all in this together. Hopefully we'll have sports back soon. Tell us, you disagree with our fades on the baseball diamond? Tweet us. Tell us you don't like our movies. We think other movies we should watch. You get stuff that Dalton should binge watch because, he's only seen 97% of all media out there. I'm sure he'll take those recommendations well. We'll have another great guest next week. Please, if you like the podcast, share it with a friend. Rate it, review it, circulate it. We're all looking for things to pass the time. Welcome your ideas on future podcasts and drafts. We will talk to you next week again. I don't know who the guest is going to be, but it's going to be an outstanding one. Hang in there, wash your hands, stay safe. We'll talk to you soon.
It's no secret that our world has been interrupted. A World Interrupted is a daily podcast telling stories of coronavirus and its impact on the economy. So subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.